Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. Let's face it, loss is a part of life. And loss comes in a lot of different varieties. Loss of a loved one, loss of a relationship, loss of a job. We're surrounded by it. And how we respond to those losses will vastly affect the quality and the trajectory of our life. My guest today has suffered great loss, but she's never been broken by it. In her words, we are not broken by loss, but we are broken open so we can grow. She is a trauma specialist and a certified body-mind therapist for those touched by sudden loss, suicide, and deep grief. She has a 20-plus year private practice specializing in grief and anxiety, and her clients receive guidance on how to navigate the ocean of emotion and discover their integrated well-being. She has lived through and moved beyond the grief of the intentional suicide of her brother, Mark, and the impulsive suicide of her teenage son, Reed. She's the author of the book, A New Morning, Discovering the Gifts in Grief, which is a memoir of her journey through grief. And no stranger to the stage, she teaches classes, she speaks at conferences, and she is a frequent TV talk show guest. And she has also created Reasons to Live Circles for those who've survived suicide attempts. Her name is Georgina Eggleston, and I hope that you enjoy meeting her as much as I did. All right. So, Georgina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's such a treat to be here.
Oh, man. I've just been looking forward to being able to talk with you a little bit more. I so loved our last conversation.
I did, too. It was so easeful, and we just kept exploring this and that, and here we were.
I know. So hopefully this conversation, we should have probably recorded that one, but hopefully this one will be just as good. But as I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, for the listeners, it might be really good for them to get an insight into your backstory and what led you to doing what you're doing now.
Well, as my son Vincent said to me long ago, "Mom, why did you choose grief?" And I said, "Vincent, I didn't choose grief. Grief chose me." Because what happened, Bobby, was in less than 4 years, 5 people in our family died. And 3 of those deaths were sudden deaths. And 2 of the deaths were people dying from illness. And that gave us that anticipatory grief time. So we got to say goodbye to 2 people, but not 3. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, each of the deaths, my brother's death, my mother, my father-in-law, and then the death of our teenage son, Reed, was a different kind of grief for me.
Yeah.
And so as I was going along in this journey, I just experienced different emotions with each person's death. And mother had prepared, she died of a brain tumor. She was the 3rd person to die. And so she was ill for 9 months. So we had that preparation. And she knew everybody's going to die. And she was just a matter-of-fact Army nurse that made it like we had closure. And I was through my grief with her in weeks.
Wow.
And my son's death, of course, was very sudden and unexpected and brought me to my knees. And that grief took me much longer.
I can't even imagine his death and just how hard that was.
Well, and what's important for us who are people who've had a child die is don't say to us, I can't imagine, because we don't want you to.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's not a correction by any means. It's just that, gosh, yes, it is so hard. And for you, you know, it is. I didn't know how I was going to do it either.
Right.
But I started the journey, Bobby, by standing at the dining room window the morning that he died, looking at the sun coming up. And I said out loud, just like the sun comes up every morning, I'll get through this grief. Mm-hmm. And so what I now realize is that was my willingness to move through the grief. I didn't know how, but I was willing to be in it.
Right. Versus what? Resisting it?
You got it.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because, you know, how many times does somebody die, or we're fired from a job, or we have to move, or something happens that is a significant loss in our lives? We didn't ask for it.
That's
right. We didn't choose it. And we're not ready to embrace it.
Right. Right.
I had a really bright client say to me recently, how do we embrace something we did not choose? And it was the sudden death of their child.
Yeah. Wow. And how did you respond to that?
I responded to that by saying, by being in the emotions, by being in the moment, and by being aware of the looping in your mind. Because one of the things that I discovered, I wish somebody had said it to me when I started my grief journey, Bobby, but years later, the saying, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional.
Yep.
And I caused so much suffering to myself. So when I was looping around in the if onlys, what ifs.
Oh, okay. So that's what you mean by looping.
I do. Mm-hmm. Those thoughts that keep going around and around.
Yeah. The ruminating.
Absolutely. That's a great word for it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Georgina, what is your title?
I am a somatic grief therapist. I call myself a trauma specialist and grief guide for those touched by sudden death, suicide, and deep grief.
Okay. Perfect. So you were not doing that before all of these?
No. No. My background, Bobby, is a speech language pathologist.
That's right.
So one of the things I learned to do was I learned to be with people who were in grief because they'd had a stroke. They'd had a head injury. They had had something, a diagnosis like Parkinson's or MS, that completely upended their life.
Makes perfect sense.
But what I didn't realize, and what so many of us don't realize, is that grief, like I said earlier, is a result of a significant loss.
Yes.
But we only think of grief if somebody has died.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that fascinated me. Well, not fascinated. Well, it did from our last conversation, because we do think, well, grief is only, it's reserved for those who have suffered that loss. Mm-hmm. Could you speak a little bit more to the different types of losses and the different types of grief?
Yes. I call them the six deadly D's.
Oh, no.
And so there's the loss that happens with divorce or relationship breakup.
Yeah.
There's the loss that happens because of natural disasters, the floods, the fires, the hurricanes, the tornadoes.
Yeah.
Those.
We experienced that here. And I know we shared that. And it was like, but it wasn't, you know, and you minimize it.
Well, absolutely. Yeah,
we didn't lose our life. So what's wrong with you? Okay. So that's the second D.
Yes, that's the second D. And then there is the D that is the despair. The despair that life is just really heavy. And we have experienced that with COVID. That's been the grief of COVID. Because our life as we knew it was turned upside down. I call it the landscape of loss. That's what we have all experienced since March of 2020.
Yeah. And when Christine was on the show, I know you know Christine because you guys are good friends as well. She talked about it like, we can't get hugs like we used to, or, you know, our favorite little mom and pop restaurants have gone away, or just grieving in general for the people. I think about the restaurant workers and people in retail, like, oh my goodness. I mean, there's a collective grieving there. So, okay.
Yes, because it's their way of life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's another one of the six deadly D's. And then there's the destruction. And that's where we look at bullying, war, trauma, murder, that kind of thing. So it's sexual abuse, emotional abuse.
Yeah.
So I really think that it's important for people to realize that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. So then we've got the death of our loved ones, the death of a dream, the death of a pet.
Okay.
All right. So we've got divorce, natural disasters, the destructive behavior, despair. Oh, and I forgot depression.
Oh, depression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit more about that one.
That one is the depression that comes from that sudden loss you weren't experiencing. And it's life just goes gray.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of loses its color.
It does. Mm-hmm. And that's like when you've been fired. I'm working with a client right now whose mother died and put this person in depression. And in our conversation this morning, Bobby, they were saying, you know, grief and depression are so much alike. You can't, what's one and what's the other?
Yeah.
And so it's just simply an opportunity for people to recognize it's not the death of a person that can cause grief. It's a significant loss that results in emotional pain.
Okay. So a significant loss that results in emotional pain.
Yes.
Okay. Do you find that some people kind of, I don't know, compare their grief or minimize their grief?
Yes.
Can you, you said that pretty definitively. So you probably
absolutely.
See that a lot.
Right.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about that. And I'm assuming that's not a good thing to do.
No, it isn't. Because what happens is each person's grief is unique to them. Grief brings up the deepest, darkest parts of ourselves longing to be healed.
Okay.
And I've in the last week, Bobby, have revised that to say it brings up the deepest, darkest parts of ourselves longing to be heard and healed.
Heard and healed.
So heard and healed. So if someone is fired and that significant loss, of course, is going to put them in grief that may last 3 days because they suddenly get a fabulous job offer and it's better than the last, or they go into this state of depression because who am I now? It's bringing up all these competency issues. It's bringing up the role.
Yeah.
And that's for them to look at in their life now.
Hmm.
So somebody else has a parent that dies.
Yeah.
But many of us know that that's the in order death. The out of order death is when your child dies.
That's right. Right.
But this is the way that we know life usually looks.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can we say that if that mother and that daughter were best friends. And this daughter is in this place of deep grief for years. How can we judge that?
That's right. Who are we to judge it?
Yes. Thank you. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And okay. Then there's other people that, because they may have been best friends, but like my mother and I were best friends, but we got to say goodbye.
You got to say goodbye.
And I've gotten to go through anticipatory grief. And so my grief was shorter, as I said earlier.
Right.
So somebody could look at me and say, oh, the death of your mother. But gosh, Georgina, you know, you're doing really, really well. when we compare, we despair.
Yeah. What was that? When we compare?
We despair.
Oh, okay.
So how can we start comparing one grief with another? One loss with another.
Yeah. So a question there came to mind when you were talking about the anticipatory death with your mom, because she was sick, what'd you say, for 9 months?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I know what you mean by that, but can you just tell me what you mean by anticipatory grief?
Sure. When mother got the diagnosis of a brain tumor with a glioblastoma stage 4, the prognosis for that is bleak.
Yeah.
It's fatal.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of time. And that was back in 1997. She got the diagnosis in 96 and died in July of 97. So with that, I knew my mother was going to die.
Yeah.
So I went into that deep sadness. What's life going to be like without my mother?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the last Thanksgiving. We had the last Christmas. Mm-hmm. And yes, we want it to be happy, but you can feel we won't have this next year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are anticipating the grief, because we're already in the grief.
You're already in it. Okay. Because then when you said like when she passed away, then people might be like, well, you seem like you're doing so well, which there could be a little embedded judgment. Like,
yes.
Well, what's wrong with you? You should be grieving more.
Right. Right. And we're seeing this very often with people whose parents die from a diagnosis of dementia, because that person has been dying before their eyes for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So what I'm really hearing, and I know you said this, but it's really hitting me. Grief is very personal.
It is. It's
very personal.
It depends on the emotional resilience of the person who is experiencing the loss. It depends on the relationship with the person or thing that is lost.
Right. Okay.
And it depends, when someone dies, if people have the belief system that love never dies, it changes form. So there are many people with whom I work that are very, very sad because their child has died or their spouse has died, because their belief system says life ends when the body dies.
Right, right. Okay. So when you are working with someone, I guess, when someone's experiencing grief, what are some things that they can do that are healthy?
First of all, they can recognize that grief is a call for care.
Mm.
They can put on their own oxygen mask first.
Yeah.
And realize that self-care is not selfish.
And that's a hard one for a lot of people, Georgina, I think.
I have a friend who says we teach what we need to learn. Hello.
That's right. It's hard though. And this just came up. I was a guest on another podcast and it was a man and he said, you know, why? And he's former military. And he said, why is it so hard for Americans to say, I need to take care of myself? But we are that way.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to our pull yourself up by the bootstrap.
Yeah.
It goes back to it's weak to ask for help. But when we look at what the pioneers did, they didn't have to ask for help. When somebody needed a new barn, it was just the thing. They all went and put the barn up.
We're all there together.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. But we've lost that now a little bit.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay. So you were saying self-care, recognize that self-care isn't selfish. Mm-hmm. Anything else that they could do that would be healthy in that time?
For people to realize, as I said earlier, that grief is an emotional process, but we get in trouble when we try to intellectualize it, when we try to put a timeline on it, when we try to figure it out instead of listening to our body that may be tired, when we, you know, we just do not want to take the time to be in grief. So what I say to people is set aside a time every day to grieve.
Huh.
And so if someone has died, you might have a place in your home where you've got pictures of that person, a candle, a journal. There's a wonderful woman that I work with, and we facilitate a suicide bereavement support group. And last night on the time together gathering, she made the comment that she's not a journaler. She always admired people who were journalers. But when her husband died, she would come home every day after work and write a letter to him of what happened at work that day.
Wow.
She put it in her journal. It was if she was having a conversation with him, like she did when he was living.
Yeah. And that brought her comfort.
And it brought her comfort. So self-care, put your own oxygen mask on first. Really check in and say, what is the most kind and loving thing I can do for myself in this moment?
Yeah.
That's really, really important, you know, to not compare.
That's right.
To know it's an emotional experience, to grieve every single day.
Yeah. But in what I hear you say there is grieve every day, but I don't hear you saying grieve all day.
No.
Like you're setting a time.
Yes. So when the initial loss occurs, I say my experience was I went into raw grief. Mm-hmm. Grief covered the tapestry of my life, Bobby. I was crying 24/7 for weeks and weeks and weeks after my son Reed died. And then I moved into a place about 8 weeks, maybe 10 weeks into the place where I went into fragile grief. And fragile grief is where you look better and everybody around you starts to have a sigh of relief. Oh, they're going to make it through this grief. But inside, you feel like there's a big hole and you're barely holding yourself together.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And fragile grief can go on for years or the rest of your life, depending on how you do the grief work. Because grief is always with us. It just changes. Grief never goes away. It just changes. It for many people, grief is a way to say, okay, who am I now? What's my next purpose? That's what happened to me.
Yeah, which is a beautiful part of your story.
Mm-hmm.
I also like what you said there. Okay, so it changes. And you also said the grief work, which to me means there's actual work that goes into maybe the healing.
Yes.
Okay.
So you experience your feelings. You learn to embrace your feelings. I call it emotional embrace.
Yeah.
You sit in your grief and are with it. You recognize when it's coming. You can feel it coming.
Yeah.
And you relate. Oh, where is it in my body? What's happening? What do I really need to do? You do it. And then it releases. It's amazing.
Yeah. That reminds me of something. This was 25 years ago. I don't even know how long. It was a long time. You know? But I was working with a coach. And she told me, because I was going through, I was in the process of losing a loved one, and it was a colon cancer. And she said, and it was like with your mom, there's a point where we knew he wasn't going to get better. Yeah. And she told me, she's like, if you ignore your grief, if you try to bury your grief, grief has a way of surfacing It's gonna come up again. So you might as well deal with it. So that's kind of what I'm hearing here a little bit. Is that, am I right?
Yes.
Okay.
Grief lives in the body.
Yeah. That was something else we talked about last time. Cause you said the body tells the truth.
So exactly.
Tell us, and I believe that. So tell us more about that.
The five principles that I always share with people are: awareness is the first key to change.
Mm-hmm.
Change happens only in the present moment. The body tells the truth and its language is metaphor. So who or what is the pain in your neck?
That one really resonated with me. All right.
And finally, the body is the sanctuary of the soul.
Yeah.
Well, circling back to the body tells the truth and grief lives in the body, it was really interesting. I was working with this woman who, she's like us, Bobby. She's an entrepreneur. She gets things done. She's made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And after a parent died, she was going on with life as usual.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I said to her, please take time to grieve every day. Because when people push through their grief, very often they'll get sick.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So 8 months after this person's parent died.
Wow.
They got a cancer diagnosis.
No way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean about the body tells the truth. And we, in our culture, we don't know how to listen to our bodies because once again, we're on that autopilot and we just go, go, go. And for me, that was one of the gifts in COVID. It slowed us all down.
That's right.
It took away the outside distractions.
Mm-hmm.
And we really had to say, okay, I'm not feeling very good today. What is it that's going to soothe me? And that's what we need to do in grief. It's people say, oh, Georgina, I just want to feel better. And I said, that's possible. I do this so people know it's possible.
And you're a wonderful example of that.
Thank you.
You are.
That's because I did my grief work.
Yeah.
I cried and I cried. And there was a time where I thought I was cried out. It was 6 months after Reed had died. And I was in that fragile grief and I was looking pretty good. And it was his 16th birthday in July.
Oh,
he died
boy.
In January and he would have been 16, the 27th of July. So we had all the other thing I say to grieving people, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. So they are going to have, the person that died is going to have a birthday.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have that death anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all the holidays.
Yeah.
So I knew with Reed's birthday, the kids were thinking about it. We were thinking about it. So we had this great barbecue in the backyard because it was summer in Nebraska.
Oh.
And so we couldn't give gifts to Reed, so I invited all the kids to go upstairs to his room and take an article of clothing or one of his medals that he'd gotten as a soccer star or art. We had things laid out that we were ready to release and share. Oh. And then they said, oh, we're going to go to the cemetery and celebrate with Reed. So I thought the next morning, I better go and see what it looks like.
What happened?
Teenagers at the cemetery having a birthday party. So I got there, Bobby, and because Reed was an artist, among other things, his stone is very artistic, and blue candle wax had gotten into the porous stone.
Oh, no.
So I went home and boiled some water and got a paring knife like my mother would do and poured it over. And as I was scraping the wax out, I got this terrible pain in my left shoulder. It was such a pain. It felt like a saber-toothed tiger was there just clomping onto my shoulder and shaking me. And I screamed out loud. And in Nebraska, you don't scream at the cemetery. You're too polite to do that. So good Lord, I was breaking all the rules.
Right off the bat.
Absolutely. And just wailing. And so on November 1st, which would have been 4 months later, I started the Rubenfeld Synergy training. And we, in the very first week, we had an exercise where I sat in a chair and a person sat looking at my left shoulder. So I'm staring straight ahead and this person's looking at my left shoulder. And she puts a hand on the back of my shoulder, her left hand, and she puts the right hand on the front of my shoulder. And she says, "What are you noticing?" And Bobby, that pain came back like that. And I said, "Wow. pain like a saber-toothed tiger." And she simply took her hands and she ran her hands down my arm and out my fingertips, and the pain went away. And that's when I discovered that grief lives in the body.
Yeah.
But what I also did is I went to one of the faculty members, shared that, and we learned that that was the back of my heart.
Oh.
That shoulder where I was shouldering my grief, there's the metaphor, was really the back of my heart.
Yeah.
And instead of crying, I was experiencing pain in my shoulder.
Huh. That's powerful. I believe that the body always knows.
It does.
We might want to ignore it, but the body knows. You know, and so kind of on that, because we've been talking about what people can do, what are some of the ways that people try to avoid it or disguise it?
Mm-hmm. Staying super busy.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, numbing with substances.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to talk their way through it instead of feeling it. And I've mentioned that, I think, now 3 times.
Yep. Because that's important.
It is. I can figure this out. I can read all these books. Yes, I'm a person who's basically wired intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, the emotions of grief were like a tsunami. I couldn't do anything to control them.
Mm.
And I was a very spiritual person. So I had that component, but then I learned to listen to my body.
Yeah. I shared with you when I lived in Portland, because I had I was diagnosed with asthma at 25. And usually when you get asthma as an adult, it doesn't go away. And I, you know, there are some things from my childhood that I've been working through, and even, you know, from my late 20s, some things happened. And I had a naturopath out there say to me one time, she's like, "Bobby," she said, "you know, in Eastern medicine, it is believed that asthma is a form of, like, you're grieving, but you haven't dealt with it." And I thought, what a bunch of hooey. Because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm from the Midwest. I don't believe all that kind of stuff. But what happened is, it was shortly, I don't know, a year after that, I got very sick and I couldn't really get up out of bed. And during that time, because I'd intellectually dealt with all of that, the stuff from my past. And so intellectually, I had it down. But to your point, I had never felt my way through it. And so when I was kind of trapped in bed, there was nowhere to run. There was nowhere to hide. And I finally felt it. And I don't have asthma. I mean, and
wow.
It was medically proven. I had the pulmonary function studies to prove I had asthma. And I'd been rushed to the hospital several times because it was bad. Well, actually, in the big scheme of things, mine was relatively mild, but still rushed to the hospital. And I've, after that time, I've had more pulmonary function studies, and it's like, there's no trace of asthma. So I know it sounds weird. And I was one of those, like, what a bunch of baloney, but I've lived it. So I believe it.
And it's true.
Yes.
Grief lives in the lungs. And it was interesting to me when COVID appeared as a respiratory disorder.
Oh.
I said, we're grief phobic in the United States. And now grief is in her face.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge relief for me to see so many articles in the New York Times calling about grief. You know, this is a podcast here and an article there. And people finally were able to name grief.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of resisting or hiding or not, it's like that boogeyman in the corner that nobody wants to see.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, with that too, it seems like sometimes people will should us when we're going through a grief. Well, at least you still, like when the fire hit, at least you still have your home. Yes, you're right. You know, or at least this, at least that. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. You should be grateful. Is that where we're
yeah.
going?
Yeah. And the thing is, we are grateful, and it doesn't mean we're not grieving.
That's exactly right. And yeah. so very, very important to not do spiritual bypass.
Yes.
And what do I mean by that? I mean, I lost all the pictures from my family because my house burned down. I have nothing left of my heritage because it burned.
Yeah.
And that there's a hole. I'm in a state of loss and shock and grief. And mm-hmm. I may be angry. And the thing we haven't touched on today is that grief is the umbrella term, but we've got anxiety and we've got all these other things. Okay. All
yeah.
these other emotions, rage, and it gets down to fear. But with the with gratitude, I love gratitude because if you stop and think about being in a lousy mood,
yeah,
but you go and do something for yourself that is nurturing and comforting, you begin to feel better.
Right.
And then you can think, oh gosh, it was so nice to be able to have XYZ in the house. I'm really grateful for it. So by then, you've just climbed up the emotional elevator.
Yeah.
You've gone up one floor after another. But if you don't stop and be with the grief, I call it in the parking garage, down in the dark, going from gratitude without feeling the grief is like putting whipped cream on poop.
I love that expression. Yeah. I think we rush. You know, we rush trying to get to gratitude, or other people want us to get to gratitude because maybe it's uncomfortable for them to be around our grief. I don't know. I don't know why that happens.
I believe you absolutely nailed it.
You think
because
so?
Because not only are we grief phobic, we're also grief illiterate. We don't know what to do with a grieving person. So we want them to feel better so we can feel better.
Right, right. Yeah. And it was fascinating to me, you know, the fire that it, you know, because I shared this with you earlier. We were over at our favorite Nordic center, and it's 2 minutes from our house. And it's one of the big reasons we moved here. And the trees are gone. So now when we go skiing, well, we still have the blackened stumps, right? So it's like a black and white picture, and it's still beautiful. And it was interesting because I was talking to Rick, my husband, and I said, when we're over there skiing, I feel this immense gratitude that the workers over there, they're like, hey, we're getting this place open. And it's amazing that they got it open for us. And at the same time, it's like, you can still grieve. So it's interesting that you can, the multitude of emotions that you can feel almost simultaneously has been stunning to me.
It has. And I really feel like that's what this whole year has been a call.
Oh,
there's been so much emotion that's happened so fast that we had to wake up and feel. So I say, you're not broken by grief. You're broken open to grow. You're broken open like a seed. And with each of those deaths in my family, there was a growth that occurred in me as a person.
Yeah.
As a result of each of those deaths.
Right. And I'm kind of thinking here, that's through the work that you did with it.
Exactly. And then after Reed died, a year and a half later, we closed our business because rehab changed. And then we moved, and I'd been raised in Nebraska. So I had been in Nebraska with family and friends for 50 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And so those, again, are reasons to grieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Even though at the same time, like when you're moving, sometimes you feel excitement.
Exactly.
Right? But you can feel both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Because I know that's one of the things that you've said, that what I think you put it like grief is a gateway to growth.
It is. Mm-hmm. And grief is an inside job. And you've brought that up several times when you said you've got to do the work.
Yeah.
And that's the inside job.
Yeah. And that this is a big piece of why you do what you do, right? Because it is that gateway to growth.
It is. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so, and I do what I do so that when I leave the planet, people are not going to say, oh, I just had this loss and life will never be one, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's yes, life is always changing.
Mm-hmm.
Life is cyclical. And it's that ocean wave, the in and the out. And you can either resist it because what you resist persists.
Yep.
Or you can embrace it. Just like my client was saying, that wise woman that I quoted at the beginning of the show. How do we embrace something we didn't choose?
That's right.
And that's what each of us are faced with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can be hard.
Oh, it is hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the operative word in what she said is the word choice.
Yeah.
I grieve when someone says to me, because their child has died, I have no choice.
Oh.
And you can't say to a grieving person, yes, you do. It's our job as those of us who are sitting, I call it companioning. That's a word that Alan Wolfelt coined. Our job is to be present with the person that is grieving, mm-hmm. not to talk them out of their emotions, mm-hmm. not to talk them into a new way of being, but simply be with them. So when someone says to me, I have no choice, I listen and hope that in time there'll be a sliver of hope that we can circle back to the idea of choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that was something you'd said, you know, when we talked last time that some, and I can't remember exactly how you said it now, but it was something like after your son died, at a point you realized like you do have a choice in how you, the rest of your life
exactly.
goes, you know?
Yeah. Who am I now? I am forever Reed's mother.
That's right.
And so when I introduce myself and people say, do you have children? I say, yes, I'm the mother of two sons. And I go and I tell them about my older son, Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say a couple things and watch carefully. And when they start to glaze over, then I stop talking about it. And it's absolutely amazing how no one, how many people do not ask about my second son.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
I just think it's because of us as communicators. It's our communication style. Oh, tell me about that, but just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And probably too, like, well, she didn't mention the other one, so maybe I shouldn't, so maybe I shouldn't mention it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. One other thing I wanted to make sure we get to. You said before that our patterns become our prisons. Can you tell me more about that? Because I love that. I love that phrase.
Thank you. We have habitual behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a pleaser and a codependent and a caregiver for much of my life. And those patterns became my prisons because I was an over-functioning person.
Hmm.
And so it would just be absolutely normal for me to say, oh, can I get you a cup of coffee? Instead of realizing, hey, let them get their own coffee. You're disempowering them. Many
right.
times people to stay safe will shut down and won't say a lot. And that's the pattern that becomes their prison because these are things we learn to do as children.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept us safe.
Oh,
and now
right.
they no longer serve us. So they have become our prisons.
Mm. And we never revisit them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I became a pleaser as a little girl because I wanted to be loved.
Yep.
Okay. Every single one of the things we do has a reason behind it. And that's mm-hmm. why we take a look at it. That's why there's so many wonderful coaches in the world and therapists and people to give us feedback as friends.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was just recording a solo episode on how do we, like, how does our choice become hidden or invisible? Ah. And it's similar to what you're saying here. Like, we start a pattern of behavior
Yes.
And there was a choice at one point.
That's right.
But now our pattern seems to hide our choice. We could break that. We could do something different, but we don't see it.
That's right. That's why awareness is the first key to change.
That's right.
Change happens only in the present moment. And the awareness is easier when we begin to check in with our body to the aches and pains and sensations and really just stop for a minute and say, oh, what am I really feeling? What's really going on here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what our body can tell us if we tune into it.
Yes.
You know, and to something you said earlier, though, I think we have to have a little bit of margin to do that. Because if we're just rushing from one thing to another, we're never going to hear it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's all tied together.
It is. Because it's like, oh, my body's here. I'm living in this body. And I'm not really connected to it.
Mm.
So I have a little tool that I've developed called ACE. And it's awareness, connecting to the ache, pain, sensation in your body with curiosity.
Ooh, I like that.
So you can go exploring to find out what its message is.
Yeah.
So it's ACC.
But that's good. And okay, so I have a perspective, but why do you say with curiosity? What's so important about that?
Well, once again, if we look at the emotional elevator with mm-hmm. the image of a tall building above the first floor are windows and light, but down in the parking garage, things can be really, really dark.
Yeah.
So if something, if you've got an ache or pain in your body and it feels like it's down in the parking garage, when we bring curiosity to it, we've got a little light. It's like one of those miner's lights.
Yeah.
And it immediately shifts
mm-hmm. Yeah,
how we look at things. You can look at something with dread, or you can look at something with curiosity. And when I simply say that, I imagine your listeners can feel a difference in their body.
Yeah.
If everybody thought of something right now or went into your body and simply noticed something. Oh, what's this ache about? Oh, I'm curious. Do you have a message?
Yeah. Where it led me to is in coaching, we always talk about navigate with curiosity.
I love it.
Because you can't feel curiosity and judgment at the same time. So mm-hmm. if I notice that, oh, I'm feeling out of sorts or whatever it might be, and I judge it, I think I make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because now I'm caught up in the judging and now I'm really a bad person because all this kind of stuff versus the curiosity of, wonder what it's trying to tell me.
And listen to the attachment.
Yes.
When we judge, we're attached.
There's
something wrong.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with you. You're grieving.
Yeah.
So be curious.
That.
Does this emotion have a message? Does this body ache and pain have a message? And life becomes so much richer.
Richer. And kind of, I don't want to say easier, but in a way it is. It's like.
It is.
It is. It feels lighter. You know?
Yes.
Oh, I love this. So,
I like the word lighter. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh my God. I think we could keep talking about this for days, but so, and I want to respect your time. I know we're kind of getting near the end of time, but can you just tell us a little bit more about what you do and how people can learn more?
People can learn more by going to my website, beyondyourloss.com.
Mm.
And on the website is a grief assessment and it's free. And
nice.
The grief assessment will reveal facets of your grief that we don't might not even think that nausea, I'm sick to my stomach,
oh,
I can't stomach this anymore, is a kind, it's a symptom of grief.
Yeah.
You know, what are the behaviors? Are you keeping busy? You know,
yeah.
As we touched on earlier. What are the emotions that are really coming up? What are you experiencing cognitively? Do you have that foggy brain? It's grief brain. There is such a thing. So the website has lots of blogs that I've written over the years that guide people who want to support a grieving person, as well as blogs for that person that's grieving.
Nice. Very good. And that was beyondyourloss.com.
Yes.
Okay. And I'll make sure we put that in the show notes. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So any final words that you would have for someone who's feeling kind of like the malaise of the last year or whatever?
Well, what popped into my mind immediately was not original. This too shall pass. But what I really would say to them is be in the moment. Because when you pasteurize, going living in the past, or futurize, you're missing the moment.
Yeah.
So I would say to them, yes, the malaise is here. Be in the moment with it. And then ask the question, what is the most kind and loving thing I can do for myself right now?
Nice. Nice.
Because when we come from that place of kindness and love, then it just ripples out from us.
Yeah.
Every one of us are energetic beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that good is going out, it makes a difference. And you don't really have to do anything but just show up and be yourself.
Yeah. And the question was, what is the most kind and loving thing I can do for myself right now?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think what's really powerful there, and I think that's what you're getting to as well, is if we're not kind and loving to ourselves, how can we be that way towards others?
Exactly.
Is that kind of when you say the ripple?
Yes.
Yeah. Very good. What a wonderful way to end.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh,
to
my
be
goodness.
With you today.
It has been my pleasure. And this is so much value here. So I appreciate it so much.
Thank you very, very much for making a difference in the world with this podcast.
Oh, thank you. That's my mission. So we'll see.
It shows.
Thank you. I hope that you loved that interview. I found so many good things in it. And I'm trying something new with the takeaways. Instead of having a long list of takeaways, I'm challenging myself to come up with 3 key insights for thriving. So here we go. Key insight number 1, grief is a call for care. Grief is a result of a significant loss in our lives, not just the loss of a loved one. And we need to recognize that loss so we can grieve it and give ourselves the care that we need instead of judging the emotion or ourselves for feeling it. As she said, there's nothing wrong with you, you're just grieving. Key insight number 2, and I'm using her words here, but don't put whipped cream on poop. Trying to rush through the grieving process is, in her words, like putting whipped cream on poop. Don't do it. Not only does it not work, but it will likely keep us stuck. Plus, it doesn't allow us to grow from it. She called this a spiritual bypass. And I have to admit, I think this has been a tough one for me, and it may continue to be. I like to try to think my way through things or find a way to minimize it, you know, so I feel better about it, you know, by saying things like, well, it's not as bad as X. The other thing that I try is I try to rush towards gratitude because it's like, oh, well, if I feel grateful for something, if I can find that silver lining, then I can make my way through it. And I think for me, recognizing that that's probably counterproductive. Gratitude will come, but maybe it shouldn't come before moving through the grieving. And key insight number 3, grief is the gateway to growth. As Georgina said, grief is an inside job. And if we want to grow from it, then we need to do the grief work. What stood out for me, there were 3 different things. She said, being present with it and noticing it without judging it or ourselves for what we're feeling. The second thing, she said, grieve every day, but not all day. And I think that this gives us permission and the space to allow the grieving to happen without trying to bypass it. And then the third thing she said is have a plan. I mean, if you think about it, if we are experiencing a loss, knowing that that loved one will have a first missed holiday or a first missed birthday, or the anniversary of their death, or whatever. But this can help us plan how we're going to deal with those days so we don't become overwhelmed or hijacked by it. I think that this episode is especially timely since we are all dealing with the effects of the pandemic and the uncertainty of the past year and the loss that went with it. I found it very helpful for me on a personal level as I think about the last 4 months of my life. We have dealt with a massive wildfire that threatened our lives and the lives of our neighbors, and it also forever changed the landscape of what's around us. There's a point in my community where you can hike up to the top and you have this amazing 360-degree view. And now when you stand up there and you look around, there is a tiny 20-degree sliver that's no longer burned. Everything else is blackened by the fire. And it's still beautiful, but it's changed. It's a loss. We've also dealt with, my family has dealt with my dad's cancer returning. And his, you know, thankfully he had a very successful cancer surgery back in December to remove it. And now he's going through radiation. And he's 3 weeks through it. And he's absolutely amazing how he's gone through it. He's almost 88 years old and his outlook is awe-inspiring. And that's pretty stressful knowing that it's your dad. And then finally, 10 days ago, Rick and I learned that our beloved dog, Riley, who is 13 and a half, has pretty advanced liver cancer. And we thought we were going to lose him last week. He spent a couple days in critical care. And it's heartbreaking for us. I mean, he is our baby, and he has brought us so much joy. And we don't know how much more time we're going to have with him. And right now, we're just trying to enjoy the time we do have. And I can tell you that there have been times in the last week or so where I have literally been stopped in my tracks and doubled over with grief. And this talk with Georgina has helped me in those moments to breathe, to be present, to not judge myself, and to simply feel, even though those feelings are, they're not always comfortable, as you can probably tell right now. But I think this conversation has come back to me, and it's a way to give myself some grace and some margin. So I truly hope that this episode was as beneficial to you as it was for me. So shifting gears a little bit, I'm super excited about a new series that we're planning. The name is still to be determined, but we plan on occasionally bringing together a handful of people so they can share their thoughts on a particular topic. The first one is going to be around the question, how has failure helped you? Our hope is that by bringing together these different voices, it will spark some energy and some insights, some different ideas for you that you can take away and perhaps implement. And on that note, if there's a question that you would love to see us explore, please send it my way and we'll do our best to accommodate it. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where our mission is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all thrive no matter what. And by doing that, we can all create the story that we want for our lives. If you're finding it helpful, please subscribe and share it with a friend. I also want to take a minute just to thank all of you who have left us reviews. That is a tremendous help and it's a tremendous boost for us, and we just truly, truly appreciate it. Join us next time when we share some more stories of growth and triumph.